Live from Auburn, the sports capital of Alabama, this is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Hello and welcome in. It is the Thursday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Drew at the controls. Bill Cameron on the Florida Gulf Coast enjoying vacation. He will be back. He'll be back in Auburn sometime this weekend. I think he's told this. He said this on the air before. And we'll get our special guest to chime in on this as well. Bill is a believer that if you are able to do so, you visit the vacation destination right before the holiday rather than actually being there for the holiday weekend. So he avoids, Bill spends the week before the 4th of July in the Gulf Coast and then comes back to Auburn for the 4th of July rather than spending the actual 4th of July somewhere that people travel, a vacation destination. And it's a smart strategy. And, you know, Bill's talked about it on the air before. So he'll be back in Auburn before the 4th of July gets going this weekend from his time on the beach. But we're not doing shows on Monday or Tuesday. Tuesday, the 4th of July, Monday, July 3rd. We're making this a four-day weekend here at Auburn Network. And appreciate station management tossing us the Monday off as well. I think I speak for everybody at the network, because I don't think this is one of those situations, Drew, where the station is closed but we're doing radio or something. I think like it's not the inverse of that. I think everybody gets Monday off here at Auburn Network, which is pretty. I might be wrong about that. I'm just speculating. They haven't told me anything. I mean, I come in here for like 2 hours a day. Like, why would I know the inner workings of the holiday schedule at Auburn Network? So anyways, Bill Cameron is on vacation. That took an odd turn, but that was a way of explaining that Bill Cameron is on vacation and we're not doing shows on Monday and Tuesday next week. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer is hanging out with us for as long as he can. It might be the whole show if we're lucky. Justin is enjoying what, in theory, is an off season compared to what's going to start happening in about 8 to 10 weeks, when you have football season and men's basketball season actually going on. But there's still stuff to look ahead to, stuff to look back on, and the Observer has continued churning out high-quality content. So how are you, Justin, and what's new?
I'm doing well. It's really hot outside. I feel like we need it to honor Bill by talking about how hot it is outside right now.
I tweeted out, man, it's a hot one, which is, you know, it's a Rob Thomas and it's a Santana. Rob Thomas and Santana lyric, of course, yeah. But it's also an observation on not just today, and we talked about it on a recent Observer podcast, how hot it looks like things are going to be tomorrow, Saturday and Sunday. Birmingham, someone was projecting Birmingham to hit 110 this weekend, which is just absolutely I mean, that is unforgiving heat. So yeah, be careful and be safe and take all the necessary precautions, because this heat is no joke as we turn June into July. Speaking of which, you were outdoors for a baseball game yesterday. You went you went to Truist. You've been there before, right? You've been to Truist a couple of times. I was up in the neighborhood on Sunday. My uncle lived in Woodstock for a while, and they happened to build the ballpark pretty close to his stomping ground. So he's been going to Truist quite a bit, and I was up there and got to see. I was stunned. I'd never been to his house before. I was stunned by how close it was to the ballpark, and that's some of those residential neighborhoods that had been there for a while. I mean, they drew the boundary for the new stuff like right up against some streets there, and there are some neighborhoods that have been there for decades that you can see an excellent view of, you know, some side of Truist Park. I haven't been inside yet. I have not been to a
game. It's nice.
Went to Fulton and Turner quite a few times, but I haven't been yet. But you got to see a Braves game yesterday. They are rolling, and I'd love to hear your report from Atlanta.
Yeah, I mean they've had this offense right now that is just clicking on all cylinders. It's just really, really good. And then so yesterday, it was kind of surprising they didn't get very many runs. But Colby Allard, a guy that gets called up on Wednesday to make his first start of the year, is a guy who was on the IL to start the season coming out of spring training. A lot of people thought, oh, maybe you get a situation where you could see Mike Soroka get a home start, or we'll see what's going on. AJ Smith-Shawver, the rookie that had this just unreal climb to the majors this year, maybe he gets a start. They go with Allard, and Allard, you know, strikes out 9 4 2/3, and just, I mean, looked really, really good. Only gave up a couple of solid contact hits, you know, and this Twins lineup, even though the Twins are not very good, they're leading the AL Central right now, and for the Braves to get that sweep, winning with defense and pitching, I think was fun, because this team's just been kind of bashing everybody right now, especially due to the fact that Max Fried and Kyle Wright are still making their way back from injuries. So the Braves really only have like two and a half real starters in their rotation, and to win with a guy that had not had to do it all year and win very convincingly with pitching was a good sign.
Barrett seemed to think we talked to him on Tuesday. Barrett seemed to think it was going to be Soroka, which is also, I guess, an option. He's been figuring things out in the minor leagues, and he could be back in a Braves uniform soon as well. By the way, it's Michael Soroka now.
Yeah,
right?
He's Michael now.
He's Michael Soroka, which is not, you know, to me, I guess maybe just because I called him Mike Soroka for as long as I did, it's going to be tough to get out of that habit. But, you know, I eventually started calling Mike Stanton Giancarlo. So, you know, it's, I guess going from Mike to Michael's.
The thing with Soroka was, you know, this was a day game, quick turnaround. They get somebody in there that Soroka, I mean, I don't think you make your decisions based on this for sure, but I did wonder, you know, the Braves haven't announced a starter for Friday yet, and it could be Soroka. And for his first home start to be a Friday night game, should be a sellout crowd, should be a really, really good atmosphere. And as opposed to a quick turnaround day game, I think, you know, I could have played a part into it as well, especially knowing that Soroka's been a guy that could benefit from some extra time off as he works his way back from, I mean, multiple years away.
And since this is a local show, this won't be all about Major League Baseball that we're interested in. Let's give this a local bend. You got to see a pinch hit or a pinch hitting appearance by former Auburn infielder Edouard Julien,
who has been he had the day off. I mean, obviously he pinched it on Wednesday, but he's been their leadoff hitter recently. And that Twins lineup has a bunch of dudes that are hitting like between 200 and 210, 215. They've got a really good pitching staff, and they've played pretty good defense behind them. But Julien he's been up and down from AAA in the majors this year. He's kind of bounced back and forth. But when he's been in the majors, he has been one of their better hitters this season.
Strong side platoon second baseman for the Twins this year. They don't play him very often against left-handed hitters. If he starts to hit lefties better as a pro, I think everything else is there for him to be an everyday player for a long time.
And he had such a good World Baseball Classic with Team Canada, kind of put him on the map this year. And yeah, that's a Twins team that, you know, they've got some pieces. The thing with the Twins is that they're pitching fairly well this year. They don't have, like, the guys who were expected to be stars for them hitting the ball have not been, like, Byron Buxton's batting, like, 205 this year. They have some other guys. Like, when you have Joey Gallo in your lineup, you know what you're going to get, about 185 with a solid amount of homers. So for a guy like Julien, he's going to get a lot of opportunities and a lot of at-bats by just hitting for good. At least it's like him and Royce Lewis, since he's come back, have kind of been it. And so, yeah, Edouard has been playing well. Played well against the Braves, too.
Well, the Twins also traded away a guy who's hitting 400. So they could, you know, they had the option
to keep. That will always
had the
be
option. They had the option to keep somebody who is you know, can provide some more contact at the top of the lineup. Another Auburn player in the pros was part of history last night. Josh Donaldson fielding the final out of Herman's perfect game for the New York Yankees. A tough year for Donaldson. We talked about it a little bit earlier on. He's been hearing it from the home crowds.
Tough year from the Yankees, too.
Tough year for the Yankees. Aaron Boone's under fire. I mean, they're 8 games over .500, but it's a division where everybody is over .500, and the Rays are having an outstanding season, so the Yankees aren't at the top of the American League. Aaron Boone is... I think he's going to finish the year, but I think if it's not a successful postseason for the Yankees, it could be his final year. But Herman last night, in a game where I think it was the Yankee commentary mentioning, like, he was probably, as crazy as it sounds, pitching for his spot in the rotation.
Yeah, he gave up 10 runs to the Mariners in his last start.
Yeah, he'd been terrible. Yeah, he'd been really struggling. And the Oakland A's are the Oakland A's, and they're 21-61, but
Triple-A lineup.
Still... Herman goes out there and he throws a perfect game for the Yankees, the 24th perfect game in the history of Major League Baseball, the fourth ever thrown by a New York Yankee.
First
one in Major League Baseball since Felix Hernandez in 2012.
I guess I hadn't realized it had been that long since a perfect game.
It had been, since 2012. Dallas Keuchel, who threw a perfect game in an A's uniform in 2010, was calling the game for the A's TV network, which was kind of cool. He was there in the – or maybe he's on the staff. I think he was working TV for the A's. So he was in the house, a former A's pitcher who has thrown a perfect game before. David Wells and
Dallas Braden.
Oh, was it Dallas Braden and not Dallas Keuchel? Okay, Braden was in the house. Yeah, but so there were some members of the perfect perfect game club there, and Donaldson records the final out at third base. Nice little pick at third base, and it would have been just awful. There was a Dodgers game. Kershaw came within an out of a. Kershaw got 20. What did Kershaw do? It was the only base runner he allowed was a fielding error by Hanley Ramirez on a fairly routine ground ball at third base. Otherwise, it would have been a perfect game. So it was a no-hitter with an error. No-hitter with an error, double-digit strikeouts, and a as close to perfection as you can get. I remember there was remember the game that where the ump blew the call at first base?
Yeah.
It was, that's right, where he was. Oh, no.
Completely blew it.
Drew, do you know what we're talking about?
Yes.
Where the referee or the umpire, the umpire had the it was the final. That was a perfect game, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It was going to be a perfect game for Gallinardi. I totally spaced on the guy's name, but I remember the out vividly, Justin.
Armando Galarraga,
where he was for the Tigers, right? Where he had. He had the guy out at first base, and it was fairly bang bang, but clearly the fielder got him out, but the umpire blew the call. So a couple near perfect games have been there in the last 15, 20 years of Major League Baseball. But last night, a perfect game by the New York Yankees, Domingo Herman, who the 30-year-old who's been part of the Yankees for his entire career, since 17, but. Anyways, we'll talk about some Auburn stuff in the world of football and men's basketball when we come back. Don't go anywhere. You are listening to the Monday edition of The Drive.
It's been from the Abbey Award-winning Auburn Opelika this morning on News Talk WANI, and all of us at the Auburn Network and the management of Sky Bar Cafe, we want to remind you, never drink and drive.
390, toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back. Hour number one of the Thursday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio, Drew at the controls, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer hanging out with us. And Justin, we didn't get into this too much yesterday. We had Jason Caldwell for the first couple of segments, and we reran some interviews by popular demand in hour number two. But the SEC-ACC Challenge lineup was unveiled, and I don't know if ESPN had free reign to make whatever matchups
usually,
they wanted,
that's usually
if there was a system in place to match teams up, or if there was an algorithm used or something, or if teams made requests, I don't know. I feel like the matchmaker could have spiced things up a little bit more.
A lot better. In fact, mailbag tomorrow at the Observer, you can check it out. I got a couple questions about the SEC ACC challenge, and I did my own. I was just like, all right, we're gonna resort this out and head better. So you can check that out tomorrow. I just really disappointed with it. Tennessee, North Carolina is fun. Duke, Arkansas is fun. That's about it.
Yeah.
Where I feel like, I mean, there's some like Alabama.
You know, you're right. I mean, the
Alabama's got Clemson. Like, that's not a particularly fun matchup.
Some of it is that there are some ACC teams that lack an obvious SEC rival, and so you can only make so many matchups. But in the case of Auburn,
they're not going to put Florida State, and Georgia Tech together. Like, they already play each other.
As we've discussed on the podcast, and there are some teams in the north, mm-hmm. in the north part of the
yeah. Like, somebody's got to play Boston College,
Syracuse, right? Like this, yeah. there's got
well, at least with Syracuse, it's a big basketball
there's
program,
juice,
and
sure.
you could see like, oh yeah, but like somebody's got to play Boston College,
and for all you know, Auburn was probably, as we've discussed on the podcast, Auburn was probably as natural an opponent for Boston College as anyone because Bruce Pearl went to school there.
Yep.
You could have given Auburn Virginia, which we thought was the spiciest matchup you could was to send Virginia to Auburn.
Henry Patton at Rivals tweeted that it's like the only way this makes sense is if Auburn and A&M were swapped,
right,
to Virginia, because A&M's playing Virginia and Auburn's playing Virginia Tech. Auburn Virginia rematch of the Final Four game would be pretty fun, and of course Texas A&M Virginia Tech, that is the Buzz Williams Bowl.
Yeah, just disappointing to see that it wasn't maybe they had their agenda, but to me there was a chance to make some really exciting regular season college basketball matchups, and instead it's a little bit more like they're relying on the appeal of the SEC versus ACC of it rather than the matchups of the games, or maybe they thought there are three or four games to feature, since a lot of these games are going to be out at the same time.
Yeah.
Maybe they thought let's feature three or four games, and the other matchups don't really matter.
Kentucky, Miami isn't bad.
It's probably the third best one.
Right, but like, I don't know. I think when you have the ACC,
Virginia,
I would love
Virginia
to see
A&M. Virginia A&M could be a matchup of two teams in the top 10 when they play too, because there are people that are pretty bullish. I know. I mean, Lenardi's got A&M as like a three or a four now in his preseason, and Virginia is Virginia. So like, I mean, so maybe the thinking is that those are two matchups of teams that are probably going to be projected as top five programs going into the season.
I would rather see Kentucky play a bigger named opponent if you're going to try to maximize it. And Miami, as good as Miami is, obviously went to the Final Four. They've been excellent the last few seasons under Jim Larranaga.
Would you have rather seen Kentucky go to Syracuse? Let's say Duke and Carolina are off the table and finding Kentucky another
partner.
If
Duke and Carolina are off the table, then yeah, Kentucky can get Miami.
Okay.
Because like, to me, like Syracuse is like, eh.
Syracuse, Virginia, and Miami are sort of in that, you know what I mean?
Or Kentucky, Virginia would be a more fun matchup, I think, than Kentucky, Miami.
Do you like that one more than Virginia A&M?
Absolutely.
I kind of do too. So, I mean, I get that there's only so much they could have done, and maybe the thinking is let's deliver two or three big headline games, and the other ones, because they're going to be dispersed on the lesser ESPN networks and ESPN Plus.
The one I'm always going to be baffled with is Alabama Clemson. Like, that is just that is a matchup that just has nothing for it.
I do think, since I don't want this to be a zero star review. So I do think Duke at Arkansas,
it's a fun game,
will be a happening.
Carolina, Tennessee is a great game.
Carolina, Tennessee is a good one too. I think Duke at Arkansas especially.
Kentucky, Miami is a good matchup. It will be a good basketball game. I think it could have been a better matchup for both teams.
And for that matter, Virginia and A&M could end up being a really big matchup when they play, depending on what kind of season those two teams are having. But I would say especially like Duke going to Arkansas, I think will be a hornet's nest. Like that will be a game that Arkansas is going to get up for that. And when Arkansas gets up for a game, it's one of the more fun.
Sure.
See, I would have done Carolina Vandy because of the
Stackhouse.
Because of the Stackhouse thing, which would have been an option too. But because I feel like you could have sent, I don't know, I think there is something special about where you send Duke and where you send Carolina in this matchup. And then those probably need to be saved for teams that have been near the top of the conference in recent years, which isn't Vandy. It is. I mean, Arkansas and Tennessee will most likely be the top two teams in the preseason poll for the conference. I my guess would be right now that those are the two teams
yeah,
that get
depending
the most...
on how you feel about Kentucky's young guys. Yeah.
See, I think Bama has a chance of getting more votes than Kentucky too. Like that, that's be. But I'm thinking Arkansas and Tennessee are going to be the trendiest picks for preseason champion in the conference, and I wouldn't be surprised to see those two teams in the top 10 in the preseason poll, and so that explains a little bit of why they would give Kentucky and they would give Duke and Carolina to those two teams.
And you got to also keep in mind, if you're going to, like, Carolina didn't make the tournament last year. Carolina, as big of a brand as it is, was not, it has not been one of, like, Miami has been a better team.
I think it's a pretty significant year for Hubert Davis. Like, if you have
back-to-back underwhelming seasons, even though, you know, you went to the national title, somewhat recently, or a couple of years ago.
I mean, I don't know how many years Matt Doherty got to struggle before Williams got. But was it? Did he get 4 or 5 years to struggle in a row?
I think he made the tournament.
I was going to say, like, I don't know how many bad years in a row.
Like, you know, you can't. I think if you're at Carolina, you can't have multiple media like don't make the tournament years in a row.
And you know what? As we learned in Auburn in 2003. A disappointing year counts extra when people think you're the best team going in, or one of the very best teams. Last year's Carolina team.
Yeah, Dory only had 3 years. They went to the second round his first season. It was 26-7. Great year. And then they had a really bad year in 2001-2002. And then the next year, 2002-2003, they missed the tournament, made it to the NIT, and he didn't last.
And what hurt Doherty, I think, even more was the fact that Roy Williams was out there winning at Kansas. You know, a guy who was as Carolina as they come. And so maybe what would hurt Hubert Davis would also be if Jerry Stackhouse continued the trajectory at Vanderbilt. Because if Vanderbilt's good at the end of the season and Carolina isn't, like, isn't there? Don't you see a path to that change happening? Like, I mean, I thought all along that if Jerry Stackhouse won at Vanderbilt, on top of everything else he's done, he becomes a very compelling candidate for the head coaching job at North Carolina. Mm-hmm. And there's a version of this in play right now where if things don't improve at Carolina, and if things continue to improve at Vanderbilt, at the end of the season,
Stack would be a great coach in North Carolina for sure.
Oh, I think any ACC school with a real chance of winning would be lucky to have. I mean, I was thinking Florida State after last season if they decided to make a change.
I think with State though, you let Leonard Hamilton go when he wants.
It's tough to be cutthroat. I mean, as bad as they were throughout ACC play last year.
I mean, they were only so cutthroat with Bobby.
Yeah.
And I know Bobby had a longer track record than Leonard Hamilton. I mean, but Leonard Hamilton's a legend.
Oh, no, for sure. No, I think Leonard Hamilton's status is what saved his job last year. Because I think most coaches probably don't survive the season Leonard Hamilton had at Florida State if they've been there at a program long. Because they've been as good as Florida State had been earlier in the Hamilton era. They get another year. I don't know how many more years you give Leonard Hamilton.
And Leonard Hamilton is it's a surprising note every time anybody sees Leonard Hamilton because of what he looks like.
He's
really old. He's one of the oldest coaches in college basketball.
Well past 70, right? I mean, he's
I think he might have been older than Kay, or at least around Kay's age.
Yeah, it's surprise. So he's I agree that you don't rush him out.
No. You don't fire a guy like that.
No, but you also, I think, you don't...
You may have some hard conversations about where the thing's going. Yeah.
But that's... Regardless of how it would have ended, I thought if the Florida State job was open, like, that's another spot where, that place has the ability to...
And Hubert Davis isn't young himself.
Right.
You know, like, you know, it might be a situation where he's a bridge. And it could be a very successful one. But I think there comes a point whenever Carolina looks for their next head coach, whenever that is, Stackhouse would be the slam dunk. Just like, you know, a can't miss kind of hire.
And he's helped his candidacy at Vanderbilt, even if they haven't been racking up wins.
The fact that team is as good as it is.
At a place that has academic restrictions.
Really tough.
I mean, we're at a place where
they've pulled some 5-stars in the past, but they haven't, you know, they haven't really had these elite players here recently. It's just X's and O's wise, he might he might be the best coach in college basketball. I could make a good argument that Jerry Stackhouse is the best X's and O's coach in college basketball.
You know,
and that you pair that with Carolina, what kind of talent Carolina can bring in? I mean, it would be really, really good.
You know, I agree with you. I think Stackhouse is at the absolute top tier of that list. I'm trying to think of who else I would have. You know, as far as like how they're. You know, I was blown away by
Buzz.
No, who was the coach at? Was it St. Peter's coach that ended up getting the bigger job?
Mm-hmm.
His team was just sensational. And I mean, well, and you can't go wrong with the UConn coach either. Like, I mean, the way they were looking in the tournament. Like some of that's talent, but a lot of that is what the way they were able to. I can't believe I blanked on the
Chang Holloway.
I'll tell you about the commercial break. You know,
Shane Holloway.
And then he went
to Seton Hall.
And then he went to Seton Hall. Okay, yeah.
Because Seton Hall's coach went to Maryland.
Yes, Shaheen Holloway had them during that run. I started to believe maybe this guy is, and who also has a pro. He also has some NBA, mm-hmm. I believe, in his in his background as well.
Yeah, and then you know, you're mentioning with UConn, like the Hurleys is just legendary for coaching. That family has been.
The Big East has gotten better. As far as like some of those programs were down and they've gone out and they've hired coaches that will make you think.
Oh yeah,
I mean St. John's bringing
Shaka,
in St. John's coming to Rick Pitino, Rick Pitino coming to St. John's, and then the Providence coach making the jump to Georgetown, which I think are both. I mean,
actually,
Georgetown's a tougher one because they play downtown in the NBA arena now, and I showed you that article. I think it was John Feinstein in the Post last year. Went to a Georgetown game and sat in the student section and counted under 50 undergrads at the game. And it's like, it's tough to resurrect. Oh, yeah. It's tough to resurrect something. Like kids today, and when I say kids, I mean people under the age of 37, probably don't remember Georgetown basketball as a perennial thing. There was the
Roy Hibbert.
Yeah, there was the run with Hibbert and Jeff Green. You know, where they had some impressive.
Georgetown's been known though, like in my basketball watching lifetime, more as the team that disappoints. It's like, oh man, they should be a whole lot better. And obviously, I mean, I'm not old enough to remember like when Iverson was it.
Sure.
Was
well, no, and they went to a Final Four or during the Florida back to backs too. I mean, even as disappointing as they were, but
Villanova came in and took that. Yep. That reign in the Big East is like, we are the team.
Yeah, but the Georgetown teams from even, I mean, the lineage of Mutombo and Ewing and Alonzo Mourning, like, you know, that's ancient history to modern college basketball. But maybe some of that's not completely gone forever. Like, we'll see, like you said, because Providence is a place where it's up and down too, but that coach was able to put
tiny.
Some,
tiny school
put
too.
And you would think Georgetown's also a place where, like, I don't know how they're recruiting right now, but maybe there's an NIL possibility if you can get rolling at Georgetown. They're a wealthy alumni that would care about Georgetown being good, and people in the area,
they care. They definitely care.
I mean, it just seems like that's a program that you would think if you legalize money being in the game. Like, maybe Georgetown can get a little bit better pretty
St.
quickly.
St. John's is the other one.
Yeah, a couple of schools in the Big East like that for sure. We'll be back with more. We're talking with Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. You are listening to the Thursday edition of The Drive.
On 1390, toll free at 888-382-7502 or email us at thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back in. Thank you, Drew. I think we had the other two microphones on, thank you, back. Thank you. We are back here on the Thursday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio, Drew at the controls, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer hanging out with us on a Thursday afternoon. Justin, let everyone know about the outstanding work you and the rest of the crew do at the Auburn Observer, because it's writing, it's podcasts, it's social media updates. I just needed to think of a third thing.
Yeah.
Because like, right now we got writing and podcast photographs. Do you do some photography? Do you do some anything like that? So, all right. Well, writing and podcasts for now.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see what the what the third thing is. Enemies of the program coming.
Yeah.
Show by haters for haters. But
that'll never happen. Yeah, you can subscribe to The Observer. What we give you in the off season is a guarantee that every weekday you will get something. We will give you five things during the week. So like today didn't have anything, but that's because we're doubling up for tomorrow. So if you subscribe to The Observer, or if you're an Observer subscriber, which there are a good number of you listening, I know, tomorrow we have a mailbag out where I talk some football and some basketball and some other fun stuff in the mailbag, the Friday tradition. And additionally, we're going to have our premium podcast episode just for subscribers, and that'll be a real fun one because tonight, when we record it, Dan and I are going to go head-to-head and draft our own offense and defense, our own starting lineups basically on both sides of the ball from the 2023 Auburn football roster. This is something that Painter and I have done the last few years. Dan's tagging in as the new member of the podcast, and so if you want to check that out, it's always a good time. It'll be a lot of fun. So that'll be the premium pod tomorrow. So auburnobserver.com, sign up. It's $6 a month or $60 a year, and when you sign up, everything we do gets emailed to your inbox. So whether it is a newsletter or a podcast, you will know as soon as it goes up, and so you can read it. It's super easy to read stuff either in the app or your email browser or whatever you use to get your emails. And then podcast, the links will drop, and you can listen to our podcast everywhere. But you can only listen to our premium ones if you're a subscriber, and those come out once a week as well.
You know what? I'm glad you mentioned the upcoming draft episode of the show that we're going to tape tonight for folks to hear later on, because there's something – I was thinking about this, and I'd love your thoughts on it. And I guess we can – I don't want to just make this about the rules of our upcoming fantasy draft, so I'll make this a more palatable question, which would be – so – where do you view Peyton Thorne and Robbie Ashford right now, as in sort of like the expectations for an offense led by Peyton Thorne for 12 games versus the expectations for an offense led by Robbie Ashford for 12 games? Because based on their track records, it seems like there's some distance between the two of them and what they've accomplished as college football quarterbacks. You know, for Robbie, you know, I wonder if it's more projection and hope versus being able to point to what he's done as a quarterback if you have faith in him moving forward.
Yeah, for me, it's going to be Peyton Thorne being your starter unless something surprising happens, whether it's an injury or if Robbie Ashford comes and sets the world on fire in fall camp and shows a lot of improvement through the air. Because, I mean, it's going to be a competition. It's going to be a battle. I know there's everybody you talk to will say the same thing, and I think those guys are going to approach it as this. But the fact of the matter is that Auburn went out and got another quarterback after spring practices. They evaluated what they had at spring practices, and they got a guy who, if he would have stayed at Michigan State, he would have been their starter this year. There was a competition going on there, but from people in East Lansing, they were surprised that he left, and you don't make that move if you don't think you're going to end up being the starter. I'm not saying it's guaranteed to him, but like, Peyton Thorne, as I've written about the last few months, go look at his numbers at Michigan State as a career. Just an average, like if you average his two seasons as a starter at Michigan State and you put those on the field at Auburn, that is a top five season of quarterback play at Auburn, period. His first season,
it's remarkably similar to Stidham's numbers.
Yeah,
like, the numbers are remarkably
like,
Stidham.
And like, you need that. Like, no disrespect to Robbie Ashford. I think Robbie Ashford should be really, really commended for what he did last year. He stepped up in a very tough situation and started a lot of games. And yes, his throwing numbers were not good at all. Like, passing-wise, he was efficiency and accuracy, he was towards the bottom of the country. However, he was a top five running quarterback in the country last season. And additionally, he was playing through injuries. Could a healthy Robbie Ashford, I mean, if Robbie Ashford, I'll tell you this, if Robbie Ashford could be a guy that's closer to 60-65% passer, that's exactly the type of quarterback you want in this offense. The problem is we just haven't seen that yet. And with Peyton Thorne, we have seen, okay, here's a dude who's really...
Jalen Hurts isn't Jalen Hurts if you take 18 percentage points off of his completion percentage. Like, he stops being But if you suddenly, you know,
and I think the thing with Robbie that was really remarkable is behind an offensive line that was not very good, and then the final month of the season, when everybody on the planet knew Auburn was just going to try to run the ball as much as possible, they still were really effective running with Robbie. I mean, that's a weapon. That is a real strength to have. The question is can Robbie Ashford be a quarterback in this offense to complete 65 around that neighborhood, maybe a little less if you can get the offense with the running game going? Can he be that accurate of a passer to succeed? Because that's the baseline you need in the SEC if you want to be a competitive team. You know, more and more teams and more of our places are going closer to 70% completion percentage or even higher with their quarterbacks. And for Auburn, when you want to do a lot of the quick strike, RPO stuff that really demands accuracy and efficiency and consistency in the passing game, we have not seen that yet out of Robbie Ashford. We have seen that more from a guy like Peyton Thorne, and he's doing it at Michigan State, where playing in the Big Ten East is the closest thing you're going to get to playing in the SEC West in college football. It is a brutal grind. And
full of pros.
Absolutely.
I mean, teams have. I mean,
and in two seasons, he has shown that he can deliver and he can make some big plays. That first season, and this is where the big thing with Peyton Thorne is, that first season next to Kenneth Walker III, he was an excellent quarterback. When Michigan State had that ground game rolling, Peyton Thorne could do whatever he wanted, throwing the ball, taking shots, making plays. Last season, State rebuilding their offensive line, thin, banged up front, no Kenneth Walker anymore. And so that took a really big chunk out of his effectiveness. You plug him into a place like Auburn where you think deep running back room, better offensive line, a pedigree and a tradition of being able to run the ball really well, even last year when things didn't go well at all for you, you can see where that matches. So, yes, there's going to be a competition. Yes, there's still going to be a battle, and they're going to have to determine a winner. But it just, if you just strip it down to the basic, like the basic through line, the basic, sequence of this story that is the Auburn quarterback position, it's like, yeah, you go get somebody like that to start.
Right, and I don't mean to, like you were saying, to commend the work Robbie Ashford did last season when he was thrown into the fire.
And I'd love to see what he could have looked like last year completely healthy. Or sure. Behind a better offensive line, which I think he should have this year.
Or if he'd spent the offseason as the starter, right? Because, I mean, they spent that offseason tailoring an offense for Zach Calzada or TJ Finley, right? I mean, it felt like it was a different offense than the one. I mean, wasn't Austin Davis pretty heavily involved in the Robbie Ashford recruitment? Like, mm-hmm. wasn't that, I mean, it was a totally different situation than the one he was even brought into. So, just much the same way, Justin, that I wouldn't diminish the contributions of a Jonathan Wallace or even Sean White in 2016, you know, when he was having to play through some difficult circumstances and that team went to the Sugar Bowl. But, like, they're when a new quarterback comes in, that seemingly elevates the ceiling of the whole team. It's not just, you know, hey, when you think about what that quarterback could bring, I don't think the intention is to disrespect what the previous quarterback was doing or anything about that previous quarterback, but it does feel a bit like Peyton Thorne was brought in not to provide insurance for anyone else to be the quarterback, but because Peyton Thorne seems like someone that can step in and make this team a whole lot better. I'm wondering if we should draft everything but quarterback because we're in agreement about how important Peyton Thorne is versus everything else. And we just say, let's say Peyton Thorne's all-time quarterback, and then we're drafting 21 other positions.
Nope, we're not doing that.
Because it seems very difficult to win if you don't get Peyton Thorne because of the acknowledgement we just made about how
important. Sure.
So that's what I would suggest about the possibility of maybe we acknowledge, hey, there's a competition. We both think it's going to be Peyton Thorne. Let's draft 21 other spots and let folks decide with that caveat, because it just seems to me like there's, you know, to all things being equal, I would agree, like a Peyton Thorne with 10 average players around him, that offense probably has a significantly, based on what we've seen, That offense would have a significantly higher ceiling than Robbie Ashford
so
and 10 average.
This is where I tell you that it's a snake draft, though. And if, say, you get the first pick and you get Peyton Thorne, the next person gets there next to their.
That's
the,
true.
And so, like,
I would just
the
that,
value.
That's where I would just think that there's a there's one position on the board where this thing is skewed pretty heavily. And we could talk about this on the draft podcast as well, because I'm fine with whatever you want to do. But that's I would just think
I'm completely comfortable in picking Robbie Ashford.
Interesting. Okay, because so, I wonder because
I feel like I can build a better team and, with the other spots.
Then there's an argument there too, because I don't mean to, like, I don't want to write off the chance that, you know, we have infinite possibilities, and one of the possibilities is, hey, if Robbie Ashford leads this team and gets better, like, there's reason to believe he can be a much better quarterback than what you saw during his struggles last year.
And quarterback is the only position really on the field where there's only one guy that you're going to, like, if all things go according to plan, you have a starting quarterback, he's going to get the majority of your snaps, and he's going to be the guy to lead. So, I get that. It's not like, you know, all these other positions, you could pick another linebacker, pick another defensive lineman, pick another wide receiver where you feel like, okay, I can kind of piece something together there. So
we'll discuss this further. We'll be back with more. You're listening to the Thursday edition of The Drive. That's Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer. I'm Dan Peck. Drew at the controls. We'll be back with more. Stick around.
Hi, Jerry here from
ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Final segment of hour number one. Dan Peck, Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer hanging out with us on a Thursday. Outstanding work, as always, from Justin. We are less than 3 weeks away from SEC Media Days up in Nashville. We'll talk some more Auburn football up there for sure as the conference takes Nashville in a couple of weeks. We're going to have wall-to-wall coverage here on the Auburn Network family of radio stations. The ESPN 106.7 original programming block from 11 to 6 every weekday. That's still, you know, for a local market to deliver 7 hours a day, you know, from the Max Roundtable on the line and then this show. 7 hours every weekday, live, local, original programming. It's pretty significant. And we're going to be at Media Days all 4 days. All three shows are going to be up there live for 7 hours. Carter's going to stay here for On the Line, but Jacob's going to be up there. Bill's going to stay here for The Drive, but I'm going to be up there. So we're going to be broadcasting live. And Justin Ferguson will be in the house for a little bit of that, and we'll talk with Justin. Auburn is going on Tuesday.
Which is my birthday.
And we think, oh, that'll be fun.
It's the third time that's ever happened.
We suspect that it'll be in the morning because Georgia's in the afternoon, and I think Georgia will get a pretty big crowd.
I thought Georgia was Wednesday.
It's Auburn. I think it's Auburn, Vandy, Georgia, and someone else. Kentucky sounds right, but I don't know if that is correct. I believe Auburn, Georgia, and Vanderbilt are all on the. I believe Auburn is it Kentucky?
Auburn, Georgia, Mississippi State, and Vanderbilt.
Okay, so maybe. Maybe it's Auburn and Vandy in the morning and State and Georgia in the afternoon.
That'd be a good one, I think.
Because they'd want
Georgia Vandy could go together.
Like Georgia and Tennessee, I suspect, will have very big crowds.
Alabama always does.
Bama always, because it's media days and it's not that far from some pretty large markets in Alabama. And Heupel going the last day. I mean, after one of the best Tennessee seasons in recent memory, I would think Heupel is going to be.
Thursday is usually like just the skeleton crew day at media days, but you get Ole Miss, South Carolina, and Tennessee on that last day. Tennessee coming off their best season in a long time. Ole Miss always entertaining with Lane, and then South Carolina's on the upswing for sure after what they did last season with Beamer.
And Beamer is a huge hit at media days too. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I think that all 4 days should be a really good time, and the coverage here on ESPN 106.7. Looking forward to that. That's coming up next week. We're not doing shows on Monday and Tuesday. No show for the third or the fourth. We'll be back on Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Maybe a Justin Ferguson appearance sometime next week. Are you unavailable next week?
I am. I'm going down. Me and Bill are tagging out. I'm going down. I'm going to go down to the beach next week.
Exciting. You're gonna hit up Destin.
I'll be down there.
I've made some pizza recommendations for you to go shout out.
It's been a minute. because I mean some people made it, like I used to live an hour from Destin, and so we'd go there all the time. But since I moved to Auburn and the fams moved up to Auburn, like it's been a minute since I've been down there.
I'll tell you what, if you're in Destin this summer, and I listeners will be, I'll shout them out because I've I don't know if I've ever have I mentioned Merlin's on the show before. Merlin's is the pizza place right by the track. It is. It used to be
the track in Destin.
The track in Destin. Yeah, mm-hmm. Just off 98. It used to be. There used to be a Blockbuster video next door. There's no way. There's no way it's still there. But Merlin's, you get the feeling it's a franchise spot, but it's not. It's a locally owned thing that's been around since the late 90s. I think it's just in that location. Total, like it's not for dine-in for the most part. It's countertop, counter service or delivery only. But it is just outstanding pizza. So if you're in the, and yeah, if it's not inconvenient for you somewhere in Destin, go to absolutely Merlin's. Tell them some Yahoo on the radio in Auburn was telling people to go check it out. People enjoy the food recommendations, Justin. Yeah. I get far more feedback about that than anything I ever say about sports.
Dude, if you build your brand to be something other than just sports, especially this time of year, people talk about it, man. You can get sports everywhere. You're not going to get Destin Pizza recommendations on every Auburn product.
We'll be back. Stick around.
Whether you're a senior golfer or...
This is The Drive. The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7. And online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390. Toll free at 888-382-7502. Or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. Hour number two of the Thursday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Drew at the controls. Did I give the phone numbers out or do any of the reads? I think we jumped right into it with Justin Ferguson. I'll correct that. Hour number one of The Drive is brought to you by the good folks at Kia of Auburn and KiaofAuburn.com. Kia of Auburn, where you're always number one. They also sponsor the podcast. Or they also sponsor the hotline, which is available 334-321-1390 if you want to call the show, 334-321-1390. Hour number two of The Drive is brought to you by the good folks at the Orthopedic Clinic, East Alabama's go-to center for orthopedic care, with locations in Auburn and Opelika, on the web at orthoclinic.com. The Drive text box presented by our friends at Southeastern Industrial Contractors, 334-564-1840, how you can text the show. Southeastern Industrial Contractors also sponsors the podcast, which is available however you listen to podcasts. Go to your favorite podcasting platform and search for The Drive with Bill Cameron. Rate, review, subscribe. It helps us out. You can also go to ESPNAU.com and use the podcast center. You can listen live at ESPNAU.com wherever you are, using your mobile browser or your desktop. So hit us up with the podcast, or listen live either on the radio or at ESPNAU.com. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer hanging out with us in hour number two. And Justin, we didn't talk that much basketball in hour one, but we did mention the SEC-ACC matchups, which had been revealed earlier this week. Auburn is going to host Virginia Tech, correct? That's going to be
late tip too. It'll be like an 8 o'clock tip.
Here, yeah, Auburn part of Wednesday. The final wave of that Wednesday afternoon.
Also, need to keep in mind, this is happening in late November. This is, you know, we've been used to with the SEC Big 12 Challenge. You take that weekend off, and they play that kind of early in SEC play. Not the case with this one. Not the case with the ACC, SEC. It's more in line with what they've done with the SEC, the ACC Big Ten Challenge over the years.
When do we usually get full basketball schedules? Do you know off the top of your head? It's a little bit closer to the middle of August, I want to say, like the nearing the beginning of the fall term. You know, that springs, that comes to mind as a time.
Usually you get it locked down August, maybe. Late July, August.
We know most of the. I feel like we know most of the out of conference.
Yeah,
there's a lot
and
of
there's
them.
And there's some that haven't been confirmed yet. Where it's that, like you've that, had some agreements in the past, and like
does that include USC, or is it or do
like,
we
I don't think there's a date set for USC.
We feel pretty sure
but
that USC
is supposed to be coming.
We feel pretty sure USC is coming to Auburn.
But it's like App State. They were supposed to do a 2-for-1 with App State. It was supposed that return leg was supposed to be this year. Is that still going to happen? I don't know. But yeah, by the way, just to reinforce it, the ACC-SEC Challenge in basketball, that is the week after the Iron Bowl. It is the week of the SEC Championship game, so that'll be that Wednesday night. So that gap between rivalry week and championship weekend in football is where you will see that.
Usually game. I think that's the last week of the term before finals for Auburn students. Now maybe there's another week in there too where you come back from Thanksgiving. I feel like there's a week and then finals are the subsequent week. So that'll be a fun time for a big time. I mean, Virginia Tech still, you know,
solid team. Didn't make the tournament last year, but a solid team.
Well, especially when you think about since Auburn basketball became more present on the national radar in the 2017-2018 season. You know, the biggest out of conference games that have been played at Auburn Arena. There was a Washington team that came in highly regarded.
Iowa State, Oklahoma.
Iowa State and Oklahoma came in as part of the Big 12 SEC Challenge. You've had are those probably your biggest brand name opponents?
Brand name opponents, yeah. You've had some really good teams.
I mean, John Morant came in with Murray State,
yeah, for sure.
But I'm thinking this USC team. I mean, Virginia Tech's on the
USC's
list of the bigger.
Blow it away,
I mean, the Virginia Tech game is going to be a big one too, and this SEC ACC challenge helps. But the USC game feels like it's going to be. I mean, that feels like it could be one of the bigger games. You know, especially for an out of conference game in the history of Auburn Arena. I brought it up again earlier this week, I think, when someone asked about facilities. I would love a throwback night at Beard Eves if they can swing it. I'm sure there are restrictions.
Yeah, there's probably stuff you need to, like, get set to have people back in.
I believe Chris Beard is exploring doing that at Ole Miss this year. They're going to, because they've been in their new building for about a decade, but the old building
is Tadpad still open?
Tadpad's still open on campus and still standing. Huh. And Chris Beard apparently wants to do a throwback night where they play an out of conference game at the Tadpad. I don't know, Justin. I'd
do it at Beard Eves.
I think if the court has been maintained to an acceptable degree.
I think it's more
degree.
Of the rest of it.
If the I mean, I don't know the last time, you know, we sent plumbers in there. Yeah. You know, I think there's things like that.
I mean, people still have office buildings.
People still have office buildings. You're right. I mean, I wonder. I mean, no, people still use the concourse for exercise. Oh, yeah. And I know
I had an indoor soccer class at Auburn at Beardy's.
Does the I don't know if the cheerleading camp has moved to Auburn Arena from Beardy's, but they used to do the. That was
this week or last week, wasn't it?
So I saw the saw the armies of cheerleaders walking around campus, but it's usually right around the end of June, beginning of July, but usually that's that's something that packs out whichever building it used and used to pack. I mean, so no, I think there would be if Beard Eves is part of the even the short term, right? I mean, if it's still something that where there's not, it wouldn't be too much of a nightmare. I mean, Midnight Madness would also be something cool if you could pull it off in there because of the, you know, because of the outsized, I don't know, the novelty of being in. Like, I'm not saying
Put it in Beard Eves, you know, make it like a charity game or something like that. Give all the proceeds, try to see how many people you can fit in there.
Yeah, I'd wondered about this before I saw the Chris Beard comments, and then the thought that maybe there's something you can actually do as far as a throwback game or a one night only sort of situation where you run the basketball game at Beard Eves, and I think it could be it could be pretty cool. If long term there are probably better uses for that building and that space on this campus, I think a lot of arenas. I used to say this with more confidence. Now I don't know if schools even bother knocking down old basketball arenas or if they just repurpose them on campus as exercise space and classroom space and things like that. Because, I mean, the Tadpad's still up. I believe, I know Kentucky uses their old gym for women's basketball and things like that. You know, things have moved from, you know, most other.
Arkansas still has theirs.
Men's basketball has moved to Rupp. Yeah, I mean, Arkansas still has theirs. So maybe there's a future without Beard Eves, even if the university imagines that there's something else they could do with that space.
Hey, when I made my visit to Auburn, campus visit to Auburn, in 2010. They were like, yeah, Beard Eves ain't going to be here. By the time you're gone, by the time you graduate, Beard Eves is going to be torn down. And it's like 13 years later, it is still here.
The master plan that the university released in the last couple of years.
They were going to put Park in there, right?
Had something else where Beard Eves currently stands. And they're, I mean, the university has shown a willingness to have some pretty significant construction projects going on too.
Oh, yeah.
When you go to the when you go to that corner of campus,
I mean, you think about how much of main campus has kind of changed.
Have you seen the dorms they're knocking down right now?
Yeah.
That side of campus. I had to go to Parking Services at the beginning of the summer, and that's sort of in the middle of. I mean, you pass through that
corner. Parking Services the funniest building in Auburn because you just have to go up a parking deck.
Oh, it's amazing. Oh, it's incredible.
Go to the side of a parking deck.
Yeah, and God forbid you don't get one of the four parking spaces that you can legally park at.
Yeah.
Parking Services.
Yeah. Shout out to
there might be more than four people who want to use Parking Services in the moment.
Shout out to Auburn. Like they have if you're media, you can buy a pass. And there's been some quarrels over the years among people who have been like, should we have to pay for parking? If this is our job. I don't care as much because that parking pass gets you pretty much everything. I don't know if it gets A-Zone. It used to give us A-Zone. I don't think it's A-Zone anymore. But like basically I could go to campus anytime I wanted to in parking. Like that's a luxury considering just how scarce parking is at Auburn.
All right, we'll talk about that some more as the that gives me an idea. Justin Ferguson, you know, you're probably looking at I don't know why I suddenly moved to this, but you're looking at going to a lot of the road games this year too, right? Speaking of Auburn's campus.
Always the football games.
That's always been
something I always do.
Taking the trip to Berkeley?
Taking the trip to Berkeley.
Have you been to the Bay Area before?
Nope. Never been to Northern California. I have the farthest north I've been the farthest north I've been in California is LA. So.
Yeah, I actually haven't spent more than like a day.
Yeah, looking forward to that. We got the everything sorted out with travel and stuff like that, and pretty. I mean, I'll tell you this, of Auburn fans, if you want to go out to that game, I know there's a perception, especially with the Bay Area, it's just everything's really, really expensive. And if you can swing tickets, try to go out there. That area's got several big airports that you don't have to necessarily fly into San Francisco or, you know, wherever or whatever the nearest is to Berkeley.
The recommendation I've been giving people based on my understanding of traveling just for the – now, if you want to see the sights in San Francisco, like that, that's one thing. But if you're there for the game and maybe you're going to take a day trip or something to on top of, like, you're going to get there on Thursday night or Friday morning, see something, and then spend Saturday watching the football game and leave Sunday, I would try to stay as close to Levi's Stadium as possible, because that airport is that's Santa Clara.
Yeah, it's near San Jose.
Yeah, the right on the San Jose border, the area around Levi Stadium, which has been it's been built up with malls and hotels and entertainment districts around the Niners Stadium, and I think there's a theme park around there as well. But it's a super touristy, and it's like I would say that if you're gonna spend a week and you're gonna go into San Francisco every day, like that, the drive would, you know, there'd be a grind and it'd be too far away. But if you're there just for the Berkeley game or something, I would say look to something around the Levi Stadium airport region or something, and you can find. I know Caldwell's trying to find golf for one of the one of the days out there, and I know somebody back from my California days. I knew somebody who was a Stanford undergrad and got to play their course, which is allegedly Stanford has the finest on-campus golf course in the country.
Would make sense.
But you got to be an alumni or a student or the guest of one to play. And so I would that's my other tip would be any Auburn folks going out there, if you know someone in the Stanford alumni club or something, make a call and try to get a favor, because that's If golf's your thing, like that would be the one connection I would like. I've heard stories about like that's one of the best courses that you can, and it's tough to play unless you're connected in those ways. But that's one of the things that I would say, like, oh, if you're going out there and you can swing it, like, I guess literally with the golf clubs, but also like if you can make it happen with the reservation, try to do that, because that's something I've heard incredible stories about. 334-321-1390. Is there anything you really want to do while you're out there? Is there anything you really want to
not
see?
Really.
Or
not really.
Alcatraz pique your interest?
I mean, San Francisco would be an interesting spot to visit, but I'm telling you, man, like a lot of these trips, it's pretty much all business. You try to go in, go out, find that, somewhere nice to eat. That's basically it. When I was in Seattle, I did some sightseeing because I had a full day between stuff.
That would be one where it's like maybe if you can give yourself a day before, like an extra day before, an extra day after, because you don't know the next time work could bring to a city like that. I totally get in an SEC city. It's like, all right, you know, well,
I've been here.
Yeah, and I will probably be here again. Yeah. Although, you know, the schedule bounds. I mean, you'll be making trips to a lot of the, won't be as regular as maybe they were in previous itinerations of the schedule, but you'll be back in Oxford or Starkville someday, like even if you don't go. Where do we go this year? It's Fayetteville?
It's Fayetteville, A&M.
Do you make the Fayetteville trip?
Yeah.
Ugh.
Flight.
Where do you fly into? Is there Northwest Arkansas.
The Walmart airport.
Man, I mean, that is...
It's a grind because if you drive, you're just gonna hate life by the time you're there.
But there's a Brahms in Fayetteville. That's a fast food restaurant I won't shut up about. You know the Arkansas.
I stayed across the street from it last time.
You know the gimmick of this is gonna be a small business restaurant show. But not local. Places far away.
Yep.
So the deal with Brahms, the gimmick with their meat and their dairy is that all of their locations are within. I used to know the number, but I think it's 400 miles of the farm.
Yeah.
There's one big farm somewhere in, I think it's like near the Texas-Oklahoma border, and they won't build a location
that can't be delivered far enough,
yeah, so they can keep the ingredients fresh. And then basically it's vertically integrated where they sell, a lot of the stores have a market attached to a little corner market or something where they sell eggs and milk and cheese and all this stuff, and I don't know.
I'm sure Culver's was like that once upon a time.
Yeah, I could see it.
It's like Wisconsin. We are much larger than Wisconsin.
But that would be Brahms would be my recommendation for anyone making the Fayetteville trip this year. This is absolutely germane to interests of folks that are following Auburn football. These are places Auburn's going
to
go.
Whatever you have to do to talk yourself into it.
334-321-1390, the number to dial. Thank you, Justin. We will be back. I appreciate the support. We will be back with more. You are listening to the Thursday edition of The Drive.
Kia of Auburn would like to wish everyone a happy summer. And what a better way to celebrate than save money during the Kia Summer Sales Event going on through July 5th.
Toll free at 888-382-7502 or email thedrive@espnau.com.
Welcome back. Thursday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Drew at the controls. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer hanging out with us as we try to keep cool on a warm Thursday afternoon in Auburn. Want to wish everybody a happy and safe 4th of July weekend again. We've got a no show on Monday or Tuesday. Love to hear from you, 334-321-1390. And Jerry has been hanging on. What's up, Jerry?
Hey, guys. You mentioned that we had to go to Arkansas this year. Mm-hmm. Reminded me of my trip to Fayetteville, and I left out of Montgomery and drove and took I-40 out there, and I drove 16 hours that day.
that's brutal. That is absolutely brutal.
I got to Fort Smith about 10 o'clock at night, hadn't had anything to eat because there's nothing on I-40, you know, it's and they were working on the road, and so you'd just have to stop, sit in traffic for a mile or so. And, I mean, it was terrible. And then so on the way home, we decided to go over through the National Forest over the top of the mountain, and it was just about as brutal.
Well, it's not just that it's in Arkansas, because Arkansas is far. It is almost in Oklahoma.
It's almost in Missouri.
It's just south of the Missouri line, and it's just east of the Oklahoma state line. Like on the way to Oklahoma City, and so yeah. it's a I mean it is it is a because I've driven I've driven all the way to like Memphis or Jonesboro or Little Rock before, but Fayetteville, I mean, it's there, and then you keep going, and it is, yeah, it's a drive. Or if you're Justin Ferguson and you're going to that game this season, it's a flight,
and it's not a bad flight. It's not a cheaper flight, but yeah, I mean, I feel there are a few people on the beat who drive to Arkansas every year. I personally cannot do it, but you know, it's a tough drive. I do like Arkansas. I like Fayetteville. I like that area. It's just a pain to get there.
You fly into Malzahn International.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, it's a fun place to visit. And I told my friend that I tailgated with, I said, if I ever go back, I'll fly.
Yep.
Because I'm not driving again.
Yeah.
But we stayed in Fort Smith, and it's right on the Oklahoma line.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And that area has grown up so much, you know, over the years that there's a lot of good spots there, a lot of good places to stay and visit and all that. But, yeah, it just ain't easy to get to, especially from Auburn, Alabama. Yeah.
Well, I think people have – I mean, it's the story of Auburn to an extent, too. Like, I think people have caught on to the quality of life around the campus of an SEC school is desirable compared to a lot of other situations. And so we're seeing – yeah, I mean, whether it's Oxford or Auburn or Fayetteville, like, there's been Tuscaloosa. I mean, the amount of development we've seen in recent decades, it speaks to the fact that folks want to be nearby places like that.
Yeah, it has good barbecue out there too.
Yeah, well, there's some good eats.
I'll let y'all go.
Appreciate the phone call. Yeah, and we've been talking a lot of barbecue on the show lately, Justin Ferguson, because of the passing of Terry Price last week, the legendary barbecue artist, among other things.
Absolutely.
And then of course having Don Dunn on to remember Coach Price on Monday, and Don still, as he confirmed in his interview on Monday, still gets up middle of the night, heads over to Country's and mans the pit and gets the meat ready to go at Country's Barbecue and works crazy hours.
I might need some barbecue tonight.
As part of his retirement, Don is the pitmeister, former Auburn defensive lineman, and it's fun because people, I think in some ways mockingly, they were also, I think, affectionate. But to say the barbecue boys, and they talk about the barbecue, the proclivity for barbecue on Tuberville's staff, in part because, hey, those guys knew what they were doing.
Absolutely.
Around a grill. And as evidence of that, Don Dunn, since retiring, has found his way to found his way to Country's where he's cooking it low and slow.
It's a run. I mean, obviously Auburn had Herb Hand, who is well known across college football for his culinary attributes, especially barbecue. It goes well together. Football coaches and barbecue and the sport itself and barbecue. I think it blends well, because when you think about the areas of the country where football is the most important, it's usually places that can sling some really good barbecue for the most part.
You know, and it wouldn't be that strange to see a coach make his team a big like spaghetti dinner.
I'm sure that happens in like the North.
Sure, or anywhere. Italian food's fairly universal.
Well, no, okay, like the Rutgers coach, giving them like a ton of like lasagna.
Yeah, you think something's going on in Jersey
Syracuse or yeah, you know that area. You could even convince me it's happening at places like
Miami.
Yeah, you got Penn State, yeah. Pitt. Like you know, you get some of that over there in
absolutely.
That area.
That was a reference to Florida's organized crime past. I could have picked
Florida International,
USF. I've been watching Goodfellas a lot lately. I think
considering every time I've been to Tampa, it feels like half the people there are from New York or New Jersey.
Absolutely, and lovingly so. The melting pot of Tampa is unlike any other in the country where you can put it. There's also, I mean, I would imagine that seafood would also be something you could serve in large quantities to these.
Yeah,
guys.
I know, like LSU, they do a lot of crawfish boils. Yeah. Yeah,
crawfish boils.
That's a good way to feed a whole lot of folks.
I think Auburn did one of those maybe during the spring.
They had a crawfish boil
in the spring. I mean, and Hugh Freeze probably no stranger to things like that throughout his. I'll tell you what, this can be a segment for later on, but the way Hugh Freeze has the way Hugh Freeze has approached this over the last few months, and I guess not just in contrast to the way it was approached previously, mm-hmm. but just sort of as you, I mean, if you'd asked a lot of the beat writers, like, here's what the next guy needs to try to do before the season starts.
Sure.
Feels like a lot of those things have been the things that Hugh Freeze has gone out and done. And
I would agree.
He's we'll see if he's made the right moves as far as are these the players to go out there and do it. But as far as what he needed to address and the moves he needed to make, not just in on the recruiting trail for freshmen, but I think more importantly with the transfers because of how many of them there are and how many spots on the roster needed work. It's been impressive to see like the way that he's gone out there and handled this.
Yeah, no, I would agree. The marketing and the promotion has been pretty strong.
Still not sure about the family thing. Still not sure about the acronym for
coaches love acronyms, man. I'll give you that.
I think is it the M? Which one's the one that has sort of a
can't remember.
I remember there's one where it's like, man, we need to find a better M word or something. I think mental toughness, right?
But then
there's no T.
Yeah.
So you gotta find but mentalism is not
mentalism.
Mentalism is not I don't think mendacity would work. I guess metal. Like
metal, M-E-T-T-L-E.
Yeah, M-E-T-T-L-E.
That could work.
I suppose that would work. I don't know. Throw that one up the flagpole to the marketing department.
They don't listen to me.
We will. We'll talk more with Justin Ferguson when we come back. Love to hear from you. 334-321-1390 on a Thursday afternoon as we approach the July 4th holiday weekend. We will be back. You are listening to The Drive. Welcome back. Hour number two of the Thursday edition of The Drive. Dan Peck in the studio. Drew at the controls. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer hanging out with us on a warm Thursday here in Auburn. And again, be safe out there with the heat advisory in effect for the next couple of days. Let's get back to the phones. And Mitch is on the line. How you doing, Mitch?
Doing well, guys. I missed the first 20 minutes of this hour, and you guys were talking food. I wanted to get in on the food scene here, Dan, and pick your brain. You know I'm in Destin 2 or 3 times a week.
Did you hear my plug for Merlin's?
Yeah, I did hear that. I know exactly where that is because the track is actually one of our customers. So they buy chemicals from us.
Merlin's used to do, I don't think they do the deal anymore, but Merlin's used to either there was a day or maybe just all the time carry out was like buy one get one free, so like it was menu price, but if you carried out you could add to your order, I think, to save money because Destin was big and traffic was bad, and they figured it was better to cut a discount than send delivery people, and you know who knows how long it could take. So like if you're willing to carry it in yourself, you know, we'll give you a big price break. I don't know if they still do that, but it's still just outstanding pizza. So yeah check out Merlin's to get the chance down there.
I will, because I was at Danny's Fried Chicken the other day, actually.
Oh, that's my, the only, you know what, that's going to be, when I get my chance at Chad Baker Mazzara, Justin, Danny's Fried Chicken is a Northwest Florida State tradition in Niceville for folks that aren't aware. Like that, there aren't a ton of dining options available if you're on the campus of Northwest Florida State University and you want to go grab something to eat quick. But Danny's Fried Chicken is at the top of that list, and so I have to imagine our buddy Chad Baker Mazzara was able to go there once or twice.
Yeah, it was pretty good. It was something else I was going to ask you.
Mitch, you know about the boathouse down there in Niceville too? Have I recommended the boathouse to you before?
No, but I found that place, yeah, down on the water, yeah, the oysters and all the dollar bills inside and everything. Yeah, I frequent that place when I was down here in tech school at Herbert Field. Hadn't been there in a while, but yeah, I know about the boathouse.
Yeah, shouts to the boathouse. Yeah. Shouts to the boathouse. Shouts to Danny's Fried Chicken. Trade Winds. Trade Winds is great. The Italian place in Valparaiso. You might not know about that one, but there's some,
looking
at Trade Winds. All right.
Yeah. Now, Justin, I know you've been to the Donut Hole.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Okay, yeah, that's like my wife's favorite donut.
The donut hole in Destin is 24 hours a day, but the one closer to 331, I always thought had better food. Like that's my so if you're in East Destin 30A, you know that situation. I think it's worth the drive to go all the way out to the one a little bit further east. But if you're in Destin, yeah, can't go wrong with the main donut hole either.
Yeah, well, the one in Santa Rosa Beach is the one you're talking about. It's the one in the middle because there's one in Inlet Beach, Santa Rosa Beach, and Destin.
Oh, I didn't know there was a third one. That's new. That's a new development for me. Okay.
Yeah, yeah. The one in Inlet Beach is right there before you cross into Bay County and Panama City Beach. But the one in Santa Rosa Beach is where they cook or where they bake and make all the donuts and then ship them out. So that's probably maybe why the donuts may be better in Santa Rosa.
Mitch, let me profoundly apologize for not recommending Merlin's to you at some point. I didn't realize how often you're over there. But you know what I'm telling you? Yeah, no, it's Merlin's is top-notch. Give them a try.
Well, I'll try them. I'll check their website and see if they got that carry out thing because that's normally what I do anyway. I don't ever go.
I'm not sure if the discount. I mean, that was a long time ago when they were doing that, but they might still be doing discounts for folks who carry out. But the food is top notch. Check them out.
Well, now tell me that pizza place that you love so much. I think that was down around.
Now that one's gone. Giordano's was the one that was between. Yeah. Giordano's was between the Sandestin Resort and the outlet malls in that little stretch of 98. There's like a big campground over there between Sandestin and the outlet malls. There used to be a pizza place over there. I think it's gone forever. But I worked for a little while at the pizza place in Baytown, the one over I think that's Roberto's, the one over by Poppy's. So yeah, you know there's still decent pizza on that side of town too.
I hate that I missed it. What was it, Giordano's?
Yeah, Giordano's was good stuff, man. Yeah, Jordan with an O on the end of it. But that place was, an institution, and I think they retired. Like I think it's a happy ending as far as the restaurant going away. But no, that place was outstanding for a while. Hey, Mitch, we got other folks hanging on. Appreciate the phone call.
All right, thanks, guys. War Eagle.
Always great to talk to you, even when it's not even remotely. Well, I worked Chad Baker Mazzara in there for Danny's Fried Chicken. Again, Justin, whatever I can tell myself.
Whatever you can do.
Bill, you're on the line.
Hey, guys, what's the dance? You talked me into staying at the Levi Stadium for the Cal game. Mm-hmm. I think you recommended that. It looks like a pretty nice place. And since you're a connoisseur of fine dining, where's a good place to? What's a premium place to go there to eat?
Oh, I know nothing about Bay Area dining. Like I really do. I can't. I am.
You know
I am
what?
Useless.
You know we're gonna need to find. We're gonna need to find some people to talk to because I feel like around the time, like beginning of September, that's gonna be a question on a lot of people's minds. So I need to get in contact with some Bay Area.
I'm gonna punt that one to Justin because I really don't have.
I need to talk to some folks.
There are cities. So like Google Maps gives you the option of like saving it. I don't know if you do this, Justin, where you can save a destination with Google Maps and it shows up as a yellow star when you pull it up. Like there are cities that I've visited or places I lived where it's just a ridiculous number of, like, if I pull up Los Angeles or Auburn or Destin or Washington D.C. or Atlanta, like places like that. But I know I am largely ignorant about the ways of the Bay Area up there, so I'm not going to be able to give you.
Hopefully, we can get you something here in the next few weeks or so. I need to talk to some people I know who live out there.
Hey, we got a little time before that, but you said something about that.
I'm told the wine's pretty good. I would say maybe look in that direction.
No, but the accommodations out by Levi Stadium, it's a little bit from Cal Berkeley, but that's it's a premium area, so. I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, since we're kind of a slow night tonight, if you guys find out of a nice place to go to, I'd like to have something in mind when I get there.
We'll do what we can, but I'm told Berkeley's an incredible campus too. So that would be another recommendation I would tell folks is that if you get the option, if you have some extra time while you're out there, like go exploring the Berkeley campus a little bit. You know, whether it's the day before the game or the game itself. I know the area I was recommending isn't all that close to Berkeley's campus, but it's. If you get the chance to see Cal, like it's a
go there early in the morning. It's a late game anyway. Late game out there anyway. But
Yeah.
So
you got time. You got time that day. You're right. Tailgate shouldn't start too early when the game kicks off.
Probably not.
when the game kicks off when it does. That's going to be a fun trip, and I assume there's going to be a pretty healthy Auburn contingent making that trip. Yeah. I mean,
I think it will be.
You never know when Auburn. I mean, there's more folks. There's more Auburn folks in California than people realize. And then there's folks that are going to make that trip because they want to follow the team and they want to see the campus and stuff like that. But yeah, I think Auburn's going to represent themselves very well out there.
All right, guys, good show. We'll talk to you later.
Appreciate it, Bill. Glad you're glad you enjoy it. We've bounced around a couple different directions here in hour number two. We're both it started with barbecue, right? There was a mention of some barbecue
I have a topic.
All right,
I just got distracted by the ESPN ticker in here. The San Diego Padres are 7 games under 500 now, and I guess this has got to be a bigger discussion. The amount of teams that have been disappointing this year that had really high expectations coming in, I mean, there's quite a few of them. I mean, I will revel in the New York Mets having the season they've had. The Padres, especially coming off the season they just had, and the amount of money they've invested in that team is impressive. Being as bad as they've been this year.
The Cardinals are more shocking because it's the St. Louis Cardinals, and you don't expect a team to be as close to the bottom of the National League as they are. The two other ones you mentioned, I still have this feeling that the Padres can do enough, but I mean they're 10 and a half back of two teams that aren't the Dodgers, right? Like you look and you got the Giants and the Diamondbacks each there. I mean the Diamondbacks and the Marlins are the surprises, the good surprises in the National League, because those are two teams I think very few people
have. And then now recently Cincinnati.
And Cincinnati's come on strong, and someone's going to win that division. And even if the gap between first and fourth is really close.
I mean, I don't want to be disrespectful to Drew sitting in here, but the fact that the Cubs are about 5 games ahead of the Cardinals is wild. Because it felt like coming into the year, it was like, well, the Cubs, they got to be building towards something. Like, you know, it'll be a progress.
I wasn't sure how much better. I thought the Pirates were on paper the worst team in the National League coming into this season. I thought it was either the Pirates,
the Rockies.
It was the Pirates, the Rockies, the Nationals. But the Rockies probably had more players that you felt good about than the Pirates did.
The Rockies just got messed up by injuries.
Well, and they didn't have the pitching. They never do. And they thought. I mean, their owner was talking about them being a better than 500
but
team.
But to your point. The Cardinals have one more win than the Rockies do.
Yeah. I mean, the Cardinals, I mean, and the Nationals too. Like they have the Cardinals.
And the Cardinals
are
in a tough spot because it's just like, okay, what do you do at this point? Do you chalk it up to like, hey, this has just been a bad year?
Well, and the Nationals, I mean, yes, the Nationals are at the bottom of the league, but
They sold the farm
and traded Juan Soto for to begin a rebuild. Yeah. Like, they think that
they really only have Strasburg that is as a big albatross
they're
contract.
Paying Corbin.
They're paying Corbin.
He matters, and I think there's another year of that, but for the most part, no.
I was struck by this yesterday because in Truist they were flashing up where a guy would come to the plate for the Braves and they'd be like, hey, this is where this guy is in the National League or in the MLB, and like, you know, Matt Olson's up there with Otani and homers and RBI right now. Acuna has the second best batting average because Arias is running away with it. But so they flash that up with Acuna being in second. Lane Thomas for the Nats is like 5th in batting average.
Having a great season.
And he's going to be their all-star.
And was a Cardinal who either Cardinals cut bait on him or he was part of a trade. I forget what ended up happening, but Lane Thomas was a real prospect and a guy that folks believed in.
And you look at the American League, it's like the Central's terrible. Like the Braves just swept the division leaders. And Cleveland's starting to come back here, but I mean, the amount of money that the Chicago White Sox have put in, and I mean, they're only 5 games back because of how bad the Central was. They're 12 games under 500 right
See,
now.
I still think that's the team, and maybe they won't do it because there's a different dynamic at play because the owner is old and he really wants to win before it's over. existentially.
Right.
But that's a team that, because of the number of veterans that are on expiring deals, if the White Sox wanted to raise the white flag on this season, I mean, between Grandal and Tim Anderson and the relievers that they have under contract, like there's and what's his name, Giolito, like there's this belief that the White Sox, if they said, hey, we're sellers, teams trying to win the World Series this year, come make an offer, like you could drastically change the fortunes of your minor league system and maybe add a young player or two if you're willing to do all of that. That to me is something that it looked like it was obvious last year that I thought the Rockies needed to do that. Like the Rockies had two or three pieces where it's like, hey,
they've got a couple this year.
You're the fourth best team in your division when everything is breaking right for you. Mm-hmm. And maybe you package three or four of your most tradable assets and you start not, it sounds defeatist to say, hey, let's wait out this era of the Dodgers and the Padres. But maybe you wait out this era of the Dodgers and the Padres and
what the Diamondbacks have done so interesting, because the Diamondbacks have done it with young talent. Yeah. I mean, two years ago they had the worst record in baseball.
Yeah, I had a schedule and still looking like they could, and the leader in the division right now, not the Giants.
A little different, but I was reading something about this week. Seattle's hosting the All-Star game, and they're probably not going to have any All-Star starters. And it'll be rare to see, like, a lot of those guys
Who was their best option? Julio was probably. I mean,
and J-Rod's not had a great year. They are fourth in the West right now.
The home run derby will have, like, I think it'll be a big moment for him in front of the Seattle crowd. But maybe they'll try to get him or whoever is, because I know he's not really playing like an All Star. Whoever represents Seattle in the actual All Star game will be. I'm so ignorant of AL baseball. It really is because of the dynamic, because of our league.
Yeah.
I mean, you name players, and I'm like.
The flip side of that, though, is that I've been really impressed with the Rangers, and they've done kind of like what the Padres did.
With no DeGrom, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's
they've kind of done what the Padres did, and they were like, we're going to spend our way to being good. And if we have that ability, why not?
Well, and especially in that league, too, where when there are two teams, and Seattle's not Oakland. But when there's two teams that, if you know, you feel like you should be
Seattle had the longest playoff drought in professional sports history.
You can rack up
before last year.
You can rack up some wins in the division if you got your ducks in a row. And
the Angels have been a mess. Now the Angels are playing better right now, but they have been a mess. You know, for most
Angels,
of the last
Angels
decade.
Playing better makes it tough though, because then they're
Astros not playing as well as we thought they would.
The worst scenario of the bunch of the options in front of the Angels. The worst scenario is
not making the playoffs. But even if you
don't win the World Series and Shohei Ohtani walks, then you're looking at
I think the most scenario is that you keep him and you don't make the playoffs.
Sure, yeah. I mean,
like you just need to make the playoffs if you're the Angels.
I mean, I think if you make the playoffs and you're bounced quickly, it's similar. I mean,
but it's better. It's the worst case scenario.
You're right. The worst case scenario is not losing the World Series. I should have been more careful with my words there. But the worst case scenario, like
if they make
the World Series and they lose the World Series, that's not the worst case scenario for the Angels. But I think
if they keep him, don't trade him, and get nothing for it, and he walks, and they don't even make the playoffs out of it. They have this guy who might end up being one of the best players of all time walk.
Right, and that's where I was going.
You didn't even go to the playoffs.
If you get nothing out of him, now he's been to the playoffs once, right? But it was short. Or no, Trout's been to the playoffs once.
Trout was at the playoffs very early in his time.
And then Shohei was on the team. I think he joined the team the year after they made the playoffs. He hasn't been since.
Ohtani's never pitched in the playoffs.
If they were to miss out on the postseason and fail to cash in this year. And then he leaves in free agency, rather than trading him would be so difficult. Trading Shohei Ohtani would be it would be so tough.
And right now they're a half game back from the last wild card spot.
Right.
So like they will probably be in contention for a while,
which makes it
but
tougher.
If they fall apart in September, or if they fall apart after the trade deadline, and it's like clear that they're not going to make it, and he goes for nothing, you don't get anything for him. Even if like how much would people be willing to pay?
We wondered that last year when Soto got traded, because if you thought it, well, but because last year, if you trade him at the deadline last year, you're giving folks two postseasons of Ohtani the pitcher and two postseasons of Ohtani the hitter. And it's like the argument is...
No, he's expiring this year.
No, no. So we're saying...
If
you trade him at the deadline last year, when the Angels were pretty well out of it, you're trading two postseasons of Ohtani as a hitter.
Oh, there's no telling what you could get for that.
What you could get for that. Especially in the face of Juan Soto, which is... Well, I think it's going to be three postseasons of Soto, right? Yeah. This isn't Soto's walk year.
No, it's not.
So it's the Nationals...
No, Ohtani's clearly the best... guy who's going to be in free agency. And then outside of that, it's like there's some good pitchers, and then it's like Matt Chapman.
We're way behind, so we're going to take a break. Great baseball stuff from Justin Ferguson. We're going to wrap things up. When we come back, don't go anywhere. You're listening to The Drive.
So you want to know what it's like?
The Drive with Bill Cameron and Dan Peck on ESPN 106.7 and online at ESPNAU.com. To be a part of The Drive, call 334-321-1390, toll free at 888-382-7502, or email The Drive at ESPNAU.com.
Welcome back. The Thursday edition of The Drive, wrapping things up. Dan Peck in the studio, Drew at the controls. Justin Ferguson from the Auburn Observer hanging out with us for the whole show. Justin, tell everybody about the outstanding work that you do at the Observer and where they can find it.
Yeah, you can go to auburnobserver.com, check it out. We've got newsletters and podcasts. We give you pretty much something every weekday here in the off season. So we didn't have anything today, but tomorrow you get two things if you're a subscriber. A really fun mailbag and a really fun podcast where Dan and I, in about an hour or so, we're going to record that and go head-to-head drafting our Auburn teams from the 2023 roster. And, yeah, we'll have plenty of stuff coming up the next few weeks as we get closer and closer to football season.
Going to do a show tomorrow. Brian Matthews from AuburnSports.com going to pop in and hang out on a Friday as we welcome the holiday weekend. In the meantime, for Justin Ferguson and for Drew at the controls, this is Dan Peck. Thanks for joining us. Good night.